It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 109 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And we are just getting off a fully X-Wing loaded weekend. Tim and I were both in attendance at Adepticon, which played host to one of the many Mandalore system opens, this one taking place in Schaumburg, Illinois.
Yeah, and this was a huge event. We had 300 players in the main event. They had two of their hyperspace qualifiers running, so just a lot of X-Wing going on over this long weekend. So today we're going to look at those top 32 lists, talk about some of the archetypes we're seeing in the game, and how those are going to kind of lead into the World Championships coming up here at the beginning of May.
Well, Tim, let's be real. They were the top 31 lists.
And we'll get into all that. So over this past weekend, between March 22nd and March 24th, the Miniatures Gaming Convention, Adepticon, which is held every year in Schaumburg, Illinois, hosted one of the many Mandalore system opens.
Yeah, and for the main event at a system open, players are going to compete in 6 Swiss rounds, and they need to maintain a record of 5-1 or better to advance into a single elimination bracket to determine the winner.
And at this year's event, we had 300 players vying for the title of system open champion,
which led to 31 players advancing into a single elimination cut.
Carson's still a little salty about this because he had a record of 4-2, but he actually placed 32 in the final Swiss score.
Yeah, it's okay. Andrew Schmidt probably would have crushed me anyways, so not a big deal.
That top 32 bracket ended up with a mirror match face-off between Will Hegwood and Andrew Schmidt.
Yeah, Will and Andrew were both flying functionally the same list. There was a 1-card difference, both flying Ezra, Lorik, and Miranda. They both destroyed their Ezras, then their Lorics, and it ended up in a Miranda versus Miranda mirror match. And this is a pretty crazy final match because, to my knowledge, this is the closest we've had to just a tie for a big premier event. Both players put in a tremendous effort to defeat their opponents opposing Miranda, and at the end of about an hour of Miranda versus Miranda, both of the players had made functionally no progress in destroying their opponent's Miranda just due to that regenerating nature.
Yeah, Will and Andrew entered a game state there where neither player was making any progress thanks to the regenerating ability of Miranda. So the game actually came down to a 2-dice versus 2-dice final salvo, which Will Hegwood won and was then crowned the Mandalore System Open champion from Adepticon.
Big congrats to both players. They'd played 10 games of X-Wing leading up to that final table. And then those final table matchups have that extended time. And they both, you know, didn't make any mistakes, causing one player to gain an edge over the other. Though it is pretty fun that Will One gets to be back-to-back System Open champion at Adepticon.
Yeah, and I guess we'll have to see if he can defend his title for a third year next year. That was a really interesting match. And today we're going to talk a little bit more about the rest of the top 32 there, looking specifically at the list archetypes we were seeing from all three factions, or I guess mostly two factions.
Yeah, the Rebels had a pretty dominant performance in the top 31, particularly the archetype that both Will and Andrew flew, Rebel Regenerating Bunker lists, where you have Lorik, a Sheathipede, and then a Regenerating Rebel Ace.
So we had 9 of these show up in that top 31, and the really core strategy to these lists is that we've got Lorik protection thanks to that Lorik pilot ability of spending that reinforced token and adding an evade result to a ship at range 1, combined with some Sheathipede control either from Fenn Rau or Ezra Bridger.
Yeah, and Lorik is a great support ship, providing that defensive boon to your other ships. And then it's funny because that Sheathipede chassis is supposed to be more of a support ship with that coordinate action, but the way it's being used in a lot of these regen bunkers is much more of a control ship. And this control is important because it disrupts the opponent's ability to push damage through on that very valuable regenerating ace, which, if it survives to the late game, is very difficult for an opponent to deal with.
Since this list archetype was functionally a third of the lists that we saw in the top 31, I think we should dive a little bit into specifically each of these ships and what role they play in this list. So looking first at Lorik, Lorik appeared in all of these Rebel Bunker, Rebel Fortress lists.
Yeah, and this ship is really powerful. I mean, it's been powerful since it's been released. Just that adding an evade result with the pilot ability makes it very suboptimal to target anything besides Lulric. And then if you are targeting it, that reinforce, just providing an evade for each attack being shot at Lulric, plus the 9 hit points that the ship has, is a substantial force for an opponent to push damage through.
And most of the Lulrics you see have some really great crew options there. We saw Ray on a lot of the Lulrics here. Being able to stockpile focus tokens and call them up later adds to both Lulric's defense and offensive potential. And then we also saw the Tactician crew card, being able to deal out stress tokens to ships you shoot at range 2, adds even more stress control, especially when combined with ships like Ezra Bridger bringing that stress control.
The Ezras we saw were all the same build, that R3A2 snapshot that we saw Will Haywood first utilize at the Fantasy Flight Regional. You know, getting that double stress trigger first with the snapshot attack and then following up with a primary attack really can disrupt an opponent. Plus, you have that Hera Syndulla crew to be able to flip around and maintain that stress threat throughout the game.
Yeah, and that's really an important part of the Ezra build, is having that Hera crew allows you to perform those 3K turns and keep that primary firing arc involved so you can continue to get snapshot R3A2 triggers.
While this is just a 5 hit point ship, you know, you'd think your opponent could pretty easily remove to get rid of that stress threat. Ezra's pilot ability giving you the ability to convert focus results to evades while stressed. Well, of course, you're going to be stressed with R3A2, giving stress tokens to yourself, means you got pretty good modification on your defense dice. Of course, plus that extra evade that Lulric can provide means it's actually kind of difficult to get rid of Ezra. But Ezra isn't the only great cheat the Pete option there. They also have Fen Rao. We saw Minnesota player Kevin Lyons make it to top 8 with a Fen Rao Sheathpeed in his regen list.
Yeah, and Fen Rao offers a different kind of control effect here, where Ezra goes for that stress control with the R3A2. Fen Rao's native pilot ability, being able to, when a ship activates inside his firing arc, Fen Rao can receive a stress token to prevent that ship from using any of their tokens to modify their attacks.
Yeah, and I mean, those harpoon missiles are kind of underwhelming when you can't spend your target locker focus to modify.
Yeah, with 2 harpoon missiles in the list I'm running right now, I've experienced that many times where I just have to decide between firing an unmited harpoon missile or hoping I get a better shot later.
Yeah, and Fen Rao is interesting. I mean, you're giving up a lot of the control that Ezra provides, but you do get some really substantial support. And that pilot skill 11 coordinate, especially when you're using regen ships with repositioning actions like Poe or Corrin, there's some interesting options there.
Yeah, I know we had 2 Corrin Lulric Fen builds in the top 31, and they could do crazy things like if the Corrin landed on a asteroid, you could coordinate an action to barrel roll or boost Corrin off the asteroid and follow that up with a push the limit from Corrin to get a second action there. So even if it looked like you were in a really rough situation, that pilot skill 11 coordinate action gave you a lot of options.
And then let's get to those regen options. Rebels have quite a lot of choices for really hard to kill ships that can get those shields back.
Yeah, and in this archetype, oftentimes this regen option is going to be where a lot of your damage output comes, and the key synergy being that when you get to the end game, if you have one of these regen platforms still alive, you have a really strong chance of closing out the game or at least winning out on points.
And of course, Miranda Donnie is going to be the queen here. The most popular choice, she has that one time high spike damage from a harpoon missile, and then that consistent damage from the twin laser turret while she's regenerating her shields back. Of course, the infinite supply of little bomblets she can drop each turn that hit pretty hard, honestly, when you can roll those crit results. And of course, that slam action is very good at getting her out of those danger spots.
Yeah, Miranda Donnie, as we've talked about before, is a ship that's just basically good at everything in the game. And having that regen ability with her native pilot ability makes her so hard to kill long term. And she holds on to a lot of points into the end game. So even if you can't kill out against your opponent, oftentimes you're going to win out just by MOV.
But we saw players be successful with some other regen ships. Corrin Horn, who hasn't seen too much use lately, saw multiple players using him to great effect. He's got that really high spike damage with his pilot ability to perform a second attack at the end of the round, but doesn't get a shoot the next turn, which means when you're in an optimal scenario to push through a lot of damage, you can double down and then disengage for a turn and re-engage for another powerful attack. Especially when people are using persistent defensive mods like, you know, the evade tokens on Ghosts or C-3PO, you know, things that they only really get once a turn. Being able to load up your damage into one really heavy hitting turn can push through a lot of those defensive modifications.
Yeah, and that's really important, especially when facing off against other Rebel Fortress lists where you need to punch through a Lorik or punch through other ships. Being able to lay all that damage down in one turn allows you to get through all those defensive modifications. We also see on Corrin that the pilot skill 11 coordinate action from Fenrau is really valuable there, where Corrin can get up to 3 actions in a turn, which is super valuable when you're trying to line up perfect shots. You can get all the defensive tokens you need, focus and evade, and then you can still get target locks or boosts or barrel rolls.
Corrin's pretty great. The Rebels also have access to Poe Dameron, who provides the highest pilot skill option of these regen platforms. Come in at pilot skill 9 plus veteran instincts to go all the way up to 11. Be able to handle those Fenrau's or quick draws moving at pilot skill 11.
Well, and we know that advanced optics has helped Poe out a lot, being able to hold on to that focus token to trigger Poe's native ability on offense or defense to convert a focus result to a hit or to an evade. This allows Poe, in combination with auto thrusters, to be very resilient to multiple twin laser turret attacks there, having pretty persistent modification on defense across, you know, potentially 4 twin laser turret shots from a ghost. You also have the Black One title, which allows Poe to shed target locks, which is really valuable when you're facing off against lists with spike damage missiles like Harpoon Missile.
Yeah, so a lot of great regen options here. A lot of great options with the Sheath Bead. And then, of course, Lorik, the consistent defensive force, keeping everybody alive. It's a very strong list. It's the list that won it all, showed up the most in the cut, and definitely something you should be prepared for.
So while these Lorik Sheath Bead regen builds were the most popular archetype Rebels were bringing to the top 31, they were not the only thing the Rebels were bringing. We had 2 other main archetypes here, the first one being a Ghost Fenrau Zebarelios build.
Yeah, so this list is all about consistent, well-modified damage from those 2 twin laser turret activations that the Ghost gets, one during its pilot skill and then one at the end of combat with the docked Phantom. And then it also combines that consistent damage output with significant damage reduction abilities, partially coming from Fenrau and partially coming from either Sensor Jammer on the Ghost or Kanan Jarrus's pilot ability.
Yeah, the Fenraus we're seeing with these Ghost builds are typically coming in at pilot skill 11, lending that pilot skill 11 coordinate action, which allows the Ghost to get extra defensive mods or to take boost actions at pilot skill 11 is very valuable. Obviously, Fenrau's pilot ability to deny extra damage from token modification is very valuable in keeping the damage levels down against the Ghost. We saw 2 main versions of this list using either a Kanan Jarrus Ghost pilot or just a Lothal Rebel Ghost pilot, and they actually do very different things.
Yeah, so Kanan Jarrus is going to devote at least some crew slots to getting extra focus action. So we saw the Ray crew being used to hold on and store up focus tokens, which then can be utilized later to trigger Kanan's pilot ability of spending focus tokens to reduce dice being rolled at defending ships.
And one interesting thing that we saw in both of the Kanan Fen builds was that the Kanan Ghost typically used Accuracy Corrector over Sensor Jammer.
Right. I mean, so they do need some modification for the attacks, and they're not going to be able to get as much from the crew slots because they're using it for focus. So they're using their crews for defense and their system slot, the Accuracy Corrector, for damage modification. And this Accuracy Corrector Twin Laser Turret is pretty great against all those low agility ships.
Yeah, I think that's really where it thrives, because you're seeing a lot of low agility ships out there, Miranda Donnies, Captain Nims, even ships like Lorik or any kind of Sheathipede, where Accuracy Corrector does limit it to just 2 hit results. That consistent modification is often enough to push damage through with the Twin Laser Turret, where you're only going to be doing 1 damage per shot anyway.
We did also have 1 Lothal Rebel make it into the cut, flown by Alejandro Sperano, who made it all the way up from Buenos Aires to compete in this competition.
Yeah, he ended up making top 16, which was really cool. Alejandro's an awesome guy. We got to hang out with him a bit this weekend.
And he elected to fly Maul and Ezra on that Lothal, which has a very powerful synergy of rerolling dice with Maul, which gets you stress tokens, which then Ezra can convert 1 into a critical hit result, which gives you pretty great modification. And with those multiple twin laser turret shots, you have a great chance of hitting, which lets you remove stress with the Maul crew. And because you're using your crews to get the damage modification, that frees up your system slot for Sensor Jammer, which when you combine with Fenrau's ability and Hotshot Co-Pilot stripping focus tokens, makes it really hard to push damage through on that Ghost.
Yeah, these Ghost Fen builds have been very popular for the last several major tournaments we've seen, and this system open has proved that they're still a very viable choice in the game right now.
Well, and honestly, it looks like a lot more players have shifted away from playing the Ghost list to countering the Ghost list, So for these Ghost players that made it up to the cut, no easy feat there.
Yeah, they had to fight through a lot of tech that had been brought specifically to beat them.
And also probably Ghost Mirror matches.
The last main archetype we saw from the Rebels was a familiar one from the past several months, Nim and Miranda being combined. We've talked a fair bit about either of these platforms in the past several podcasts.
But of course, these are both great twin laser turret platforms, great harpoon missile platforms, great bombing platforms. This list just really has a crazy high damage output, especially in that opening approach.
The last list we actually have to talk about here can't really fall into the category of an archetype because it was really the only one of its kind we saw here, though it does use a lot of abilities that have proven to be effective in other popular builds.
Yeah, Ryan has a Captain Nim utilizing, of course, Twin Laser Turret and Bomblet Generator, and then a Crimson Specialist, which is going to be launching a lot of Thermal Detonators, or just using that Crimson Specialist pilot ability to put those Thermal Detonators in suboptimal spots for his opponent.
Yeah, this is a really funny list. We have the Zeb TIE Fighter there with Sabine's Masterpiece title, giving it a crew slot, which is then used to put Sabine and a Seismic Charge on there. This allows that Crimson Specialist, when it's launching bombs or using its pilot ability to lay them anywhere touching the Crimson Specialist, to deal that extra damage from the Sabine trigger.
Yeah, this list can do some neat bombing tricks using either the Launch from Trajectory Simulator or Crimson Specialist's pilot ability to put that bomb in a unexpected spot, and then perhaps hold it for a turn, waiting for your opponent to move in, using Captain Nim's pilot ability to stop a bomb from detonating.
Yeah, so I do have to give a shout-out to Ryan Bell for taking this list into the top 31 there. I was not expecting to see a BS-17 bomber make the cut, so it was actually kind of cool to see that.
Absolutely. Provided some much-needed diversity to the Rebel lists in the
So we looked at the Rebel list archetypes that were present in the Adepticon top 31. So let's go on to the Scum and Villainy archetypes.
Yeah, not too much of a selection here. We did just have two players make it into the top 31.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to call these archetypes based on that, but they do, I think, feature probably the best mechanics that Scum and Villainy has in the game right now.
Yeah, I mean, within the Scum faction, these are both popular archetypes. You have Asajj and Nim, who, of course, Asajj is kind of the premier scum ship right now, and Nim is definitely one of their next best options. Not as great on the scum side because you don't have access to Sabine to make those bombs hit harder, but the ability to genius a bomb and not have to worry about it dealing damage to yourself is great. And, you know, Asajj does really appreciate the damage output that Nim provides, getting her into a great late game state.
Well, and you know firsthand, Carson, how great Asajj is in the late game there, having access to that Lots Razi crew where you can remove stress tokens from your opponent's ships to add evade results to your defense. That in combination with that mobile firing arc, which is very effective, and the access to double glitter stims and a countermeasures makes Asajj a really strong choice for Scum and Villainy, probably the strongest choice they have right now.
Right, and I mean, the reason I moved away from Asajj Nim was that I didn't like the Ghost matchup that much, but I mean, the Ghosts weren't as successful here as they have been in previous events. So this is a decent call here. And then we also had Nim and Sol Sixa, flown by Minnesota player Mike Merkel, make it into the cut with just a bunch of bombs and, of course, that high spike damage that we see in, like, the Miranda Nim, having those two harpoon missiles.
Yeah, Mike's list here had four proton bombs on Nim, which in combination with Trajectory Simulator is just a terrifying threat, especially to Imperial ace ships that were out in pretty strong force at this event.
Yeah, so that's it for Scum. Let's get to those Imperials.
There's really not much to talk about there. Yeah,
it's almost like all their good stuff keeps getting nerfed and they don't get that many expansions.
Oh, you sound a little sour.
They have no new expansions on the way.
That's
how is
true.
It gonna get better?
For that I don't have an answer. But we can look at the Imperial archetypes coming from the top 31 here. A fair number of ships showing up here. This represented almost half the cut minus the Scum and Villainy ships there. So while Rebels were about half the cut, Imperials had a pretty strong presence here as well.
Yeah, no surprise to see some Palpatine ace play doing well. Captain Yor being the choice we see across all the players in the cut. Really need that stress relief provided by Yor, where you can put that stress on the Lambda shuttle instead of those other aces nearby.
Well, and this helps in two different ways. You have the inherent advantage of when you perform a stress-dealing maneuver like a three-bank sloop on a quick draw, you're able to take that stress and still give that ship access to actions. It also helps counter the stress control that we're seeing from a lot of those rebel builds.
I mean, of course, you also have that Palpatine double crew providing just the much needed consistent modification for these Imperial ships.
Yeah, and I can say as a quick draw player, I'm not currently using a Palpatine build, but I would really enjoy if I had that more reliable defense that Palpatine provides. Being able to hold onto a focus token with advanced optics, which we see on a lot of quick draw builds, is great for defense, but sometimes you really do need that extra evade result that Palpatine can give you for when the dice just aren't going your way.
Yeah, Palpatine is great for controlling that spike damage output that quick draw provides, making sure you just lose just one shield and maximize your amount of double shots that quick draw provides.
Well, and we've seen other Palp Aces builds in the past be very popular. I think the quick draw is really important here because quick draw does provide that potential spike damage to break through those Rebel Fortress builds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw quick draw not just in the Palpatine Aces, but across the Imperial faction list choices here. It's got that high damage potential, plus that is pilot skill. Even if you're taking something like Expertise, you still have pilot skill over a lot of the important ships.
And teamed up with the quick draw and Captain Yor, we also saw some Imperial Aces. The most popular choices were either a Inquisitor, which is a really great, strong late-game ship that provides pretty consistent offense. And we also saw a lot of Omega Leaders, which are really good against Ghost builds.
Yeah, those Score to Settle Omega Leaders combined with Omega Leader's pilot ability makes that a very one-sided card, which is quite a steal for 0 points.
Yeah, with a Score to Settle, you're choosing a ship at the start of the game, and then whenever you're attacking the ship you chose, you can change a focus to a crit result, and whenever the ship you chose is attacking you, they can change a focus to a crit result. But thanks to Omega Leader's ability, where if you have that ship target locked, they can't modify their dice, it really is a one-way transaction for 0 points.
We also saw two copies of Rear Admiral Chernu carrying Palpatine and the Kylo crew paired with Quick Draw make it in. We've talked a bit about this general archetype, that Kylo crew provides just a very strong control effect, dealing out blinded pilots or damaged cockpits, reducing your pilot skill to zero, especially against those low agility ships that are so popular. It's very hard for them to avoid a Kylo Ren trigger.
And the Kylo Ren ability is really valuable when the ship counts are low. We didn't really see anything in the top 31 here, no list that had more than three ships in them. So being able to deal out blinded pilots is really valuable when there aren't that many ships shooting at you in the opposing list.
And of course, you also have Palpatine backup, which helps slow down the rate that Quick Draw loses shields, or you can use that on offense to change to a critical result to just guarantee you get a Kylo Ren trigger. Very powerful. And provides a lot of consistency to this list.
And one thing that's really good about the Rear Admiral Chernow quick draw builds is that they beat most other lists on pilot skill. So both of these ships typically come in at pilot skill 10 thanks to veteran instincts or adaptability, which is going to push them above a lot of the more popular choices, the pilot skill 8, Miranda's or Corrin's, and other pilot skill 9 quick draws that opt for different elite pilot talents.
We also had quite the variety of three small base Imperial ships. Historically, this would be more like a 3-ace list, except half of these ships really aren't aces. They're much more jousting ships.
Yeah, one of the popular choices we saw here was actually the Kylo Ren in the TIE Silencer, which has a lot going for it right now, especially given the pilot skills we're seeing in the metagame.
Oh, absolutely. And this ship really utilizes a lot of the same strategies that those Rebel regen ships are utilizing. They're just a very expensive, hard-to-kill ship, which means you get to hold on to a lot of points at the end of the game. Plus, because pilot skill has gone down a little bit, Kylo can really dominate when he is the highest pilot skill ship on the table with that advanced sensors push the limit combo. That is a very mobile and reactive ship.
Yeah, when Kylo is the highest pilot skill ship on the board, it's going to be almost impossible to find a way to get shots at it with all those repositioning options that you get from advanced sensors and push the limit.
We did also see quite a few quick draws pop into these three ship builds. We've talked a lot about quick draw already, but here we see her elect to take a lot more veteran instincts or adaptability boost quick draw's pilot skill up instead of opting for expertise to give extra modification. So generally a little bit of the leaner, cheaper quick draws.
Yeah, the cheaper quick draws here are important because you're investing quite a few more points into the other ships in your list. Having the veteran instincts or adaptability is a lot cheaper than having things like expertise. And often these quick draw builds would have to lose out on things like advanced optics just because they don't quite have the points there to fit that in the list with the other ships they're bringing. One thing that was surprising to see, though, in these small base ships is there was a pretty high density of TIE Defenders showing up.
I mean, TIE Defenders have been very powerful before, and even with a slight nerf to TIE X7, it's still a very good, you know, jousting efficiency ship. The damage output defense ratio is very good for the points you pay.
A typical TIE Defender is going to be in the low to mid 30 point range, and having three defense dice backed up by a focus and evade token actually means they're fairly resilient to twin laser turret shots, which is really important right now for ships in the game.
Yeah, I was actually surprised. We not only saw X7 Defenders, which very resilient, but we also saw TIE D Defenders opting for either tractor beam or ion cannon. So you trade a lot of that defensive survivability for very high damage output, which I think is particularly effective against those Miranda Donnie builds.
And I think that's a pretty good call. Miranda's probably the most prevalent ship you're going to see coming from Rebels, so being able to use that combination of tractor beams and or ion cannons to lock that Miranda down and then push a bunch of damage through is probably going to be one of your best strategies to try and kill that Miranda so she doesn't survive to the late game.
Right. I mean, that tractor beam shot on Miranda is either going to use up all of her defensive mods, that C-3PO and Lorik, or make them irrelevant by getting rid of her agility if it hits. And then the rest of your follow-up attacks are really going to put some pressure on Miranda.
Yeah, so really there's two different ways you can go with your TIE Defenders here. Either sticking to that TIE X7, which I think was the most popular way, gives them really persistent defense. And then if you're using some of the name pilots like Colonel Vessery, where he can get that target lock if the ship is already target locked by another one of your ships, really adds to the offensive potential of those ships.
We also saw a few players opt to take the Rogue Squadron Alpha Class Starwing. This is another great jousting efficiency option for the Imperials. We saw either the missile versions or the cannon versions be successful.
Which I thought was really interesting that it's viable both ways. One of the builds we saw had the crack shot, cannon title, heavy laser cannon loadout, so they can put out some really strong offense and consistent offense. Then we also saw one that was using a harpoon missile build, so you can get that spike damage and get that extra damage from the harpoon missile condition.
Yeah, and while the Starwings do have pretty good defense for that initial opening engage, their survivability does become a bit of a liability as the game goes on, whereas those Defenders kind of have the consistent defensive modification, and the longer the game goes on, they're going to be harder and harder to bring down. But those Starwings really do pack quite a high damage output.
And I think if you're an Imperial player going for this kind of list, it is an interesting choice you have between TIE Defenders and Rogue Squadrons, which I think kind of fill similar roles. The Alpha Class Starwing tends to front end the damage a little bit more, so you're going to be going for a much stronger initial engagement. But they do tend to struggle a little bit as the fight goes on because they have a little bit harder time turning around and still getting shots. Whereas the TIE Defenders, the generics particularly, might not get as many offensive modifications, but thanks to that white 4K turn, they're able to stay in the fight a lot more consistently.
Yeah, and I mean, both are great choices. We saw them both do very well. One other ship that did really surprise me appearing in a few of these three-ship Imperial builds was Countdown, the TIE Striker.
Yeah, I would not have expected Countdown to really break into the top 31 here. One big problem I saw is that TIE Striker has just 4 hit points, so when thrown up against those twin laser turret ghosts shooting, you know, 4 volleys in a turn, there's a good chance that this ship could go down in a single volley.
Right. I mean, it's not great against the twin laser turret. I mean, it does still have 3 green dice with lightweight frame, so it has a chance against the twin laser turret shots, but against everything else, it is just such a suboptimal target.
Well, in Countdown's pilot ability, of course, where you can, if you don't have a stress token, take a stress token to cancel all hits and just suffer 1 damage, works pretty well against other forms of spike damage like harpoon missile or quick draws shots.
Right. I mean, when you're pairing it with some of these other Imperial aces like Kylo Ren or Quick Draw, who are just such a high priority target for opponents, they're probably going to let this Countdown live for a little while. It doesn't have a target lock modifying its 3 dice attacks. It's just got that focus for damage modification, which means it's not the biggest threat on the table. But if it gets to live for a while, then, you know, those attacks do add up over time.
Oh, and TIE Strikers with the adaptive ailerons are really good at repositioning and staying in the fight, being able to bank and then take one hard turns. So even if you're not getting persistent damage modification, over time, the longer this ship lives, the more likely it is to deal some damage.
Yeah, so overall, we're really seeing quite a bit of diversity with the Imperial faction. A lot of different pilot choices and really a lot of different strategies you can utilize.
So there you have it, a look at the top list coming from the Mandalore System Open at Adepticon. It was a really fun event. We do want to shout out everyone who ran the tournament, all of the tournament staff, the judges, and the marshal, Chris Brown, did a fantastic job making sure we had a really smooth, fair, and fun event.
Yeah, and I want to thank all my opponents. I had just a bunch of great games of X-Wing, a lot of fun. So thanks for all the great games.
Yeah, I would like to thank my opponents, too. I didn't have a whole bad game in the bunch there. It was a lot of fun to be had, even the ones I lost. Really fun event there. I do also want to give a shout-out to all of the listeners who came up to us during their event. There was actually a lot of you guys, and we really appreciate that, hearing feedback about the podcast, hearing that you like to listen to the show. It's just a really cool experience for us. So anytime you see us at an event in our signature Radio TCX shirts, be sure to come up and say hi. We'd love to talk to you guys. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page. And while you're there, you can also leave us a 5-star review and a little comment saying what you like about the podcast and why other X-Wing players might be interested in listening.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast.
This week, we want to give a shout out to Jeeps, who left us a 5-star review saying that he found this podcast to be one of the most succinct and enjoyable X-Wing or otherwise podcasts. Thank you, Jeeps.
Yeah, thanks, Jeeps, and a huge thank you to everyone else who's already left us a review on iTunes. Those reviews are really important, and just taking the time to make those reviews really means a lot to us.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.